You ready?
It's time to start.
This should be played at high volume.
That's cool.
You know what this is.
What is this?
Me, don't you remember?
Totally amazing.
I think you've got something there.
Quite understandable.
It's on the air.
Something's definitely going on here.
Take my word for it.
Now.
Come on. It's showtime.
Make it so.
Ready, go.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. Our guest today is Philip Bigler. He's a teacher, an author, and an historian, and has written 10 books. He's been a featured guest on such programs as Late Night and Nightline, and has served as an on-air historian for Fox News, CNN, and the History Channel. And today we'll be talking about the Vietnam War, where 58,220 Americans lost their lives. Now, of that amount, 8 were women. But only one woman died as the direct result of hostile enemy action. And Philip's book is called Hostile Fire, The Life and Death of Sharon A. Lane. And he joins us today. Philip, thanks so much for the time.
Well, thank you, Barry. It's a pleasure to be here.
I want to ask you first, how did you first hear about Lieutenant Sharon Lane?
Well, I was working on a book and about Washington and monuments in Washington, and I went to the Vietnam Memorial and was looking at the incredible, Maya Lin Monument. And, there were 58,000 plus names on the monument, and I realized that there were 8 women for the first time. I never realized that there were 8 women who were actually killed in Vietnam. So I began to do some research, and I thought I'd write the book about all 8. And ultimately, I decided to focus on Sharon Lane, mainly because I got in touch with her mother in Canton, Ohio, and her mother gave me access to all of her letters and materials that she had written from Vietnam. So it made it a really poignant and a pretty interesting story.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that question. What was her mother's initial reaction when you contacted her?
Well, I think she was a little nervous. A lot of times, people have often contacted Mrs. Lane, or had contacted Mrs. Lane, with stories and things that might not necessarily have been true. So I think she wanted more than anything to know that I was a legitimate historian. I told her that it would take me 3 or 4 years to write the book, and of course this was all pre-internet days, so everything had to be done. By visiting places, going to Canton, Ohio, going to Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And so it took basically 4 years to complete, but I promised her that I would have a book for her and that it would be an accurate and honest rendition of Sharon's life and, unfortunately, her death as well.
I was surprised, Philip, when I read the book that there was so much detail in it, because I know you started the book around 1991, right?
Right, that's correct, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there was no internet. You couldn't Google anything or whatever. You had to do it all with foot leather, right?
Exactly. One thing that was really important to me, there was actually a couple things that happened, was Sharon was a very prolific letter writer, and she wrote 14 letters from Vietnam, and even though she was only in country for 6 weeks. And then there were another 31 letters, rather, that she had written from Fitzsimmons Hospital, where she had been stationed beforehand. And then 8 letters from her time in Fort Sam Houston. So in many ways, this was a snapshot into what Sharon was thinking and doing at the time. And, of course, they were completely accurate because she never anticipated that these would ever be published or ever be read by anybody except by her family. And the other thing that was incredible was there was a Red Cross worker who was at Chu Lai during this time, and her name was Amy Lazar. And Amy had kept a very detailed logbook, and this again gave me a perfect glimpse into what was going on in the 312th Evacuation Hospital where Sharon was stationed. But I'd spent a lot of time, I was a high school teacher at that point, and I would get in my car after work on Friday and drive to Canton, Ohio, spend the weekend, and then drive back to the Washington, D.C. area. I did that pretty much once a month for about 2 years. So
wow.
It was a pretty busy and difficult task, to say the least.
Tell us a little bit about her family.
Well, I actually only met Mrs. Lane. She has 2 siblings, a brother and a sister. Her father passed away in 1979, so I did not have the chance to meet him. But Mrs. Lane was a very gracious and very wonderful woman. And, of course, she never got over the loss of her daughter. She was very gracious to let me look at her personal items and personal effects. But I felt very bad for Mrs. Lane. I mean, in many ways, when the war was over in 1975, for most America, that was over and done. But for Mrs. Lane, she lived the Vietnam War for the rest of her life, and she just died a couple years ago at the age of 93.
But her father died young.
Yeah, he was very despondent and died only, only 10 years after her death. But he was a heavy equipment operator in Canton, Ohio, and of course, he was devastated by the loss of his daughter. And of course, you know, too often it's, you know, people remember, would remember the family on Veterans Day and Memorial Day, but, you know, they lived this 365 days a year.
And as you mentioned, 58,000 other families were doing that for many, many years. Some still suffer from the effects of the Vietnam War.
Oh, absolutely. I always say that if you go to Sharon's grave, I said that's a Vietnam memorial, just like Maya Lin's monument in D.C., not as well visited, but it's certainly a very poignant monument to the Vietnam era.
One thing about your book, Philip, after I read the book, I felt like I knew Sharon, and that's a compliment. Yeah, it's a compliment to your writing.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, some of the detail in there, like you wrote about what she ate for dinner on her 25th birthday. There's facts
right
in there. I shook my head and said, "Now, how did he find that out?"
She put it in letters. Believe it or not, she would write these very detailed letters, and that, like I say, there was an amazing snapshot into her life. I wouldn't have been able to do it had she not done that. And as I say, a very prolific writer, 53 letters, and of course, that is a lost art these days. But thank heavens that she did write it, and her parents or her mother certainly preserved all those letters.
For the listeners out there, Philip, tell us about Sharon.
Well, she was a remarkable young lady. She grew up in Canton, Ohio. Finished high school there, and like a lot of young women during that time, there weren't a whole lot of options for what to do. You could pretty much be a teacher, a secretary, or a nurse, and Sharon contemplated, I think, all three of them, and ended up going to a nursing school right out of high school. Well, she went to a nursing school in Canton. Basically, it was a three-year internship program. And the nurses were given hands-on training, and so she completed her nursing, went to work as a nurse, and quite frankly was looking for some sort of excitement in her life, so she joined the Army, much to the surprise of her parents. She went to Fort Sam Houston, where she did her basic training in San Antonio, and then was stationed at Altman Hospital in Denver, Colorado. And there, initially, she was put on the tuberculosis ward, which she absolutely hated because it was basically young men who were confined there, and they were very rowdy, and they often snuck out, and they would try to smuggle in alcohol and so forth. So she didn't like that. She then was detailed to the intensive care unit. And she finally decided that she wanted to go to Vietnam to do something, and to do something meaningful with her life. And so she volunteered for service there. She was sent to Vietnam in 1969, and she was stationed with the 312th Evacuation Hospital in Chu Lai. And initially, she was working as a regular nurse in the normal operating rooms. But then she was detailed to the Vietnamese ward, which was basically housing either Vietnamese civilians or, in some cases, even Viet Cong or North Vietnamese prisoners. And she worked there in what was called either Ward A or Ward B. And she was very thankful at the end of her life to get the night shift, because the night shift in Vietnam ran from 7 in the evening until 7 in the morning, and it was a little cooler, a little bit less hectic than it would be during the day. And that's where she was when she was killed by a rocket attack on June 8, 1969.
Those wards had no air conditioning. They were open.
That's true. They're basically Quonset huts.
Yeah.
They were in an H shape. And they were basically Quonset huts. They were built very very quickly and actually fairly primitively. The entire compound, the 312th compound, was located on this beautiful bluff overlooking the South China Sea. The irony of it was, to the north of it was the AmeriCal division, 10,000 American soldiers there, and then to the south of it was the a Marine Air Base. And the hospital was in the middle of between these two bases. And quite frankly, what was happening would be the enemy soldiers would often fire rockets at these large compounds. They were completely inaccurate. You never knew where they were going to go. And sure enough, one unfortunately hit the ward that Sharon was working on.
Philip, you mentioned the Vietnamese ward. You detail it extremely well in the book. For our listeners out there, it was basically the remnants of a third world country. Sharon saw stuff there that she had never seen in medical school or in a stateside hospital, ringworm and diphtheria. And these people were really, some of them had never seen a doctor before.
Exactly. And so that was very trying too, because there was also a huge language barrier. They didn't speak the language, and so to communicate with the patients was very difficult. There was very little hygiene in these areas, and the villagers were very primitive in terms of where they lived. And as a result of that, they very rarely did see a doctor, so this was their first experience. Some of them came in with all sorts of diseases and illnesses that would defy the modern imagination. They also had the problem is whenever they had Viet Cong prisoners there, they had to have MP stationed in the ward as well to make sure that the enemy prisoners did not attack the staff, or that the patients didn't attack the enemy. So it was a really strange place. But she loved working, especially with children, though. The children were very special, and a lot of times these youngsters were brought in, sometimes with war wounds and sometimes with illnesses and disease.
We're talking to Philip Bigler. He's the author of a book called Hostile Fire, The Life and Death of First Lieutenant Sharon Lane. You mentioned in the book she was even offered a transfer outside of that ward and turned it down, right?
Yes, right. I think she enjoyed the difference of that. I mean, you know, one of the problems that the nurses had in Vietnam, the evacuation hospitals were basically hospitals where you tried to stabilize patients and then you would relocate them to either a more elaborate facility, either in Saigon or in Japan. And so very often when you treated soldiers, you never knew what happened to them. A soldier would come in with a severe wound. They'd be treated, and they'd be evac'd out fairly quickly. And so you never actually knew what happened to those patients. And then, of course, the other thing was it was very difficult to see, patients die, young men dying from wounds that they incurred in battle. Although the 312th had a remarkable save rate, they had something like a 98% save rate, which was really an incredible thing.
Yeah, there's one letter in the book where Sharon writes home and talks about that night three men had died in her ward. And it seems like every one of those was a little personal to her.
Yeah, there was, all the nurses that I spoke with and the doctors I spoke with, there was always sometimes one or two patients that really stuck with them for the rest of their lives. And actually, there was one terrible tragedy that took place. There was a group of soldiers being sent home, and they were being evacuated, but they were being flown home from the Marine Air Base. And someone made a mistake and fueled a prop plane, a prop transport plane with a jet fuel. And as a result, the plane crashed on takeoff, and here these guys were all ready to go home on their Freedom Bird and ended up in the hospital, and most of them ended up dying from their wounds. And it was pretty cosmic for everybody, the idea that these guys were so close to making it through their tour of duty and then ended up dying on their last day.
Speaking of last days, Sharon had been in country less than 50 days, I think 41 days or so, on June 8th, 1969. Can you walk us through that day, the events of that day?
Well, there had been rumors that there was going to be that there was enemy activity in the area, and Sharon came on duty at 7 that evening. Again, her shift was 7 to 7. She worked 6 days a week, 12-hour days. She was working on the ward. Everything was fairly routine. The nurses were supposed to be wearing flak vests while working, but as things were, the flak vests were uncomfortable, and over the course of time, virtually everybody would take their flak vest off during their time on duty. And she was doing basically charting and monitoring the patients. And then about 5:55 a.m. in the morning, she was only would only be on duty for another hour and 5 minutes. North Vietnamese platoon launched a 122 millimeter rocket at the compound. Now these rockets were Soviet built. They were built for basically Warsaw Pact countries. And they were supposed to be on the back of trucks with launch tubes, but the North Vietnamese basically just would build these very primitive launch platforms and fire them in the direction, again, of large compounds. The weapon was called by the Soviets, it was called Grod, which means hail, because they carried a 41-pound warhead, and it was a shrapnel type of warhead. When it exploded, it just showered people with a hail of shrapnel. And sure enough, Sharon never heard the rocket. The rockets were faster than the speed of sound, so the explosion that killed her, she would have never heard. It exploded in between the two wards, Sharon was struck by a piece of shrapnel in the throat, and it cut her carotid artery, and she died virtually instantaneously. Another Vietnamese girl, a 12-year-old girl, was killed in the attack, and 24 other patients were wounded, as were a couple of the other personnel. When Sharon died, of course, it was an incredible tragedy for the 312th, the entire hospital mourned her loss, and of course, this was the first and only person that was killed in the 312th time in Vietnam.
Now, reading in the book, Philip, the night of her death, this story actually, although there were no names, made the national news, and her parents actually saw that newscast from Frank McGee.
Yeah, they did, and it was really tragic because her parents were watching the nightly news, and they had made an announcement that there had been an attack, and that there had been some casualties. And they were about ready to go out to dinner, and of course, the odds of anything happening to their daughter were very, very small. And sure enough, as they were preparing for dinner, an army car showed up, and Mrs. Lane answered the door and asked, basically, "Is she dead?" And they said, "Yes." And then again, the thing that's incredible is how, in many ways, how callous the process then becomes. The letters are all, pro forma letters sent, notifying officially of the death, notifying when the remains will be returned and so forth, and how much money is allotted to the preparation and the interment. And of course, the thing that was amazing about Vietnam, unlike other wars, we had what we called concurrent return, which meant that the casualties were from death to burial was about a 2-week period of time. And so Sharon was killed on June 8th and was buried within those 2 weeks, buried in her hometown of South Canton.
You did talk to her mother about the day that the Army officer came.
The idea of a casualty officer showing up at your door, I mean, is the worst fear of any family or spouse that or parents, of any military personnel. Sharon did not come from a military family. The odds of her getting killed in Vietnam seemed to be slim to none. At least most people assume that. So I think it added to the poignancy. As I said in the book, there's no glory in being the parents of the only nurse killed as a result of enemy action. It's a tragedy in its own right. And even though, she's remembered now as that, I know her parents would have given anything had it not happened.
After her death and in the ensuing years, there were lots of honors for Sharon. Things were dedicated to her, statues. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, they've honored her there's been American Legion posts named in her honors. There's been a statue at the hospital that she first started out, where her nursing home is, in Fitzsimmons. They renamed one of the ICU wards in her honor. And again, these things are fairly cyclical. They do this periodically. As I say, the interesting thing is that for the Lanes, I mean, these are nice honors for Sharon, but I'm sure they would have preferred not to have any of this have ever happened.
Absolutely. Did they ever give you any indication, or Mrs. Lane ever give you any indication of what they thought life would be like for Sharon after the Army?
She never really speculated by that. I think this was such an overwhelming loss for her. In many ways, her room was preserved almost as a shrine to Sharon. I mean, it was left the way she had when she left. And who knows what she would have done. I don't know if she would have continued in nursing or not. She was only 25. She could very easily have been gotten married and had children and family. We just never know. You'll never know.
Whatever happened to her Corvair?
That was one of her pride and joys, this black Corvair, which, you know, again, was the was the an iconic car of the 1960s with the rear engine and all.
And like many Corvairs did, I think twice going across country, it broke down on her.
Right. Yeah, she actually towed a U-Haul with, it was a pretty amazing feat, for this young lady to be driving a Corvair with a U-Haul trailer on the back, but she did it and was, and that's a pretty good trek from Denver to Ohio.
We're now marking, believe it or not, the 50th anniversary of her passing.
That's right. It's amazing. I've had the privilege to speak to many Vietnam veteran groups over the years, and they're always struck by Sharon's story. And in some ways, it's the Vietnam vets are finally getting some of the recognition that they've long deserved. And on this anniversary of the 50th anniversary of Sharon's death, again, it's always appropriate to remember her, as well as all the thousands and thousands of nurses who served in Vietnam as well. It was one of the great moments in 1993 when they actually dedicated a statue to the women nurses who served in Vietnam, which now is right there at the Mai Lin Monument.
Philip, if someone wanted to get a copy of the book, where is it available?
Well, yeah, you can order it directly from Apple Ridge Publishers, which is appleridgepublishers.com. If that's hard to remember, there's another website that you can go order from our bookstore, which would be tomb2021.com. That's the tomb of the. That's basically for the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, and the 2021 anniversary, 100th anniversary of the tomb. So tomb2021.com is probably the easier one to remember.
It's a very special story about, I'm sure, a very special person. And
I appreciate you remembering Sharon on Veterans Day. And again, we thank all of the American veterans. My father was a career Navy officer, and I know the sacrifice that the military has done over the years. And we're very blessed to have these men and women serve our country.
Yeah, you dedicated the book to your dad.
Yeah, he's buried at Arlington National Cemetery, right below the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, and he always said he had to get promoted to get in there because he's right next to Jimmy Doolittle. So it's pretty special. It's pretty special real estate, but I honor him every day.
Oh, I've been to Arlington many times, as I mentioned. My mother and father buried there, and it's a very special place. And when you stand there and look over the miles and miles and acres of tombstones, knowing that all those men and women have served and some had given their lives for the country, even more poignant on a day like this.
Well, on the back of my father's tombstone, it says, each headstone represents a story waiting to be told, a past to be remembered. And that came from the first book I wrote on Arlington called An Honored Glory, which was published in 1986. And so when you go there, you've got to remember that each one of those persons was a human life just as important as ours that we have today. So it's a place of remembrance and a place of honor.
Very thankful that you took some time with us today to tell the story of Sharon.
It's been my pleasure, Barry. Thank you so much for having me.
It would be so fine to see your face at my door.
I'd like to thank Philip Bigler for joining us today on the podcast. Again, his book, The Life and Death of Lieutenant Sharon A. Lane, is available through Amazon. On our next podcast, we'll be looking at the lost audio tapes from Lance Corporal Michael Baranowski from Norristown, Pennsylvania. Fascinating look at the audio tapes that he sent back and forth to his family in the States from Vietnam. A look behind the curtain, if you will, to a soldier's day-to-day life during the drudgeries of war in Vietnam. Also remember that March 29th is Vietnam Veterans Day. It's a special day set aside annually to commemorate the hardships suffered and the sacrifices made by 9 million Americans during the Vietnam War. However, this holiday is not only to honor the former soldiers, but also the families who supported them before and after the war. I'm Barry Papernick. Thank you for joining me, and we'll see you next time, right here on More Than a Podcast.